I am very grateful for the opportunity to talk to you this evening about this lesson. Seth told us about the opportunity that he has to preach next month in West Africa. And I was very, very encouraged to learn about that, of his willingness to go, and the situation, the circumstances. It just sounds very encouraging, and we want to learn all we possibly can. I know that when he comes back, he'll give us a full report, and we'll be able to learn more about that work, and that, I think, is extremely important. The scripture that was read this evening, of course, the Great Commission, everyone is familiar with it. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations. The same is in Mark 16:15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to the whole creation. Luke's account says that repentance and remission of sin should be preached in his name to all nations. And then we get into the book of Acts, of course, and it describes the carrying out of that great commission. Beginning in Acts 1 and verse 8, Christ, just before he ascended, said, "You shall be my witnesses," talking to the apostles, of course, "both in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and even to the remotest part of the earth." And we learn in a couple of scriptures, for example, Romans 10:18, that in the first century, the gospel was actually preached in all creation under heaven. Or as Colossians 1:23 says, "The gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven." Those are amazing statements, but that is exactly the carrying out of the commission. And that's what the church is charged with. The church is, of course, the pillar and ground of truth. Okay, now these are chosen apostles, yes. They had spiritual gifts, yes. And they had synagogues in every city where they could enter in, and this is a good springboard. But remember Acts 8 and verse 4, those who were scattered about went everywhere preaching the word. Acts 11:19 says they traveled as far as Phoenicia, Cyprus, Antioch, preaching the word. So everybody was involved. The church, and so far as the apostles, the individual Christians, and the congregations. Now, they had no political backing. There was no emphasis in all the book of Acts or anywhere else on money. No telephone, no telegram, no radio, TV, no printing press, no computer, imagine, no internet. Nor did they have a missionary society or a sponsoring church or church institutions, but simply as Christians and as churches of Christ, they carried the gospel. How could they possibly do it without all these indispensable tools? Jesus, of course, supplied the motivation. Matthew 9:36, when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. And we see them every day if you watch the evening news. People throughout the world without the gospel. And all the troubles and all the agony and all the misery that we observe throughout the world because they don't know the gospel. Truly the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send forth laborers into the harvest. John 4:35, Christ in Samaria tells the apostles, "Lift up your eyes. Look on the fields, for they are white already under harvest." Then we have the beautiful parables of Luke 15, the lost sheep, lost coin, and lost boy, which clearly point up Jesus' fervent love for the lost. Here's the driving power. Here's the force behind it all. Concern, love, and concern for the lost souls of the world in every place. As Paul says in Romans 10 and verse 1, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. You see, you read the book of Acts and just observe Paul. You get tired just thinking of what all he did and where all he went and all his work. But here it is. That's why. Here's the driving force. My heart's desire, my prayer to God, is for Israel that they might be saved. Being conscious, every one of us, being conscious of what Christ said in Matthew 16, 26, what shall it profit a man? He shall gain the whole world, lose his soul. Absolutely, the most invaluable possession in all the world is the soul. Do we believe, brethren, tonight, do we really believe that one soul is worth more than all the treasures of the earth? One soul. And the way Christ looks at things, that's worth more than the whole world. Save one soul. Think about this. Save one soul. Potentially, you're saving a multitude. Abraham, one man. And then his seed became as the sands of the sea and the stars of heaven. Can't be counted. One soul. A person, this person, it's married, it starts having children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and you're talking about one soul becoming potentially a multitude. A little girl in Birmingham was invited to a Bible class, a 12-year-old girl. Bill Hall told me about this, and he was preaching there at 77th Street. I held a meeting down there. And this little girl, he said, was invited to the Bible class. Well, she was really interested, and later on she obeyed the gospel. She encouraged her mother to come, and her brother, and her father, and Bill said, before long, 14 people, new Christians, added to the church through the one little girl. There's no way to measure, absolutely no way to measure what you accomplish when you gain one single person, even the interest of a child. In this case, you've probably seen the charts. This is very interesting, but you've probably seen these charts where one person gains one person a year. One person gains one person a year. Okay, first year, there's two people. Second year, four. Third year, eight. Fourth year, 16. And in 20 years, how many? Just give a guess off the top of your head. Don't say it out loud. Would you believe 524,288? We must go and we must send. I was so glad to see the eager response of the men when Seth presented his opportunity, and the church agreed to not only send him, but also supply a big chunk of the expense money. I think that's wonderful. It's a real good step. 3 John 6, you'll do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. You'll do well when you do that. I like that scripture. For they went forth for his name's sake. Therefore we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with the truth. Will this congregation be thinking, as Seth goes into West Africa, will we be thinking we're there with him? We went with him. We sent him. We have fellowship with him. That's the way we ought to feel when we have fellowship with men. Like Philippi sent to Paul when he was preaching in Thessalonica. Well, they were having fellowship in that work. And whatever was gained there, they were involved in it. So 2 Corinthians 11:8, churches supplied Paul with a salary so he could preach. Philippians 4:16, even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. Paul had several co-laborers, Timothy, Titus, Luke, Epaphras. We read about all of these in the letters, and of course, it's just absolutely amazing what they accomplished in that that first century. Why so few willing to go into foreign fields? There's a lot of gospel preachers in this country, conservatives. But why so few willing to go into foreign fields? Well, it's hard. Leave family, familiar surroundings, higher standard of living, higher level of education, and umpteen conveniences. Yeah, that's hard to walk away from that. Many times a wife is not willing. Many times the grandparents have a fit. No, don't you take my grandchildren off to another country. So it becomes a real problem. And then, of course, all the red tape and the hassle over visas and customs and what have you. And then even learn a foreign language. And you know what? When I talk about a foreign language, I'm even including English. I think I'd rather go anywhere in the world than to go to London and try to understand the people over there. Bill Rees preached, he took a long tour through London and South Africa and Argentina and all these countries. He said, the only place I couldn't understand it was in London. Won't they speak English? Nah, not really. They sure don't speak American, I guarantee you. And then there's, of course, the culture shock. But major obstacle, you got to raise support. That has stopped many good men from going into foreign fields. The hassle over raising support. Because you can crisscross this country to raise it, get a minimum amount to live on, go 5,000 miles away, and then the end of the year you get your pink slip. We're sorry, the church just can't help you any longer. We got to pave the parking lot. We got to change out the air conditioner. Too bad. But the solution is very simple. Let the churches accept their responsibility, 1 Timothy 3:15 and all the scriptures. Let them take the initiative. Let them choose men, support men, pray for them, communicate with them, form a strong bond, be partners with them, stand behind them all the way. Then you'll have more and more men going into foreign fields. I want to give you just a brief survey of the work that Faye and I and our family have been in. I went into Mexico 1945. That's what, 68 years ago. Stayed about a year. And that is the only way, really, I think, to really learn a foreign language is to go into the country and learn it from the people. Actually, we intended to live in Mexico. After I was down there nearly a year, and Faye and I got married, and we went back. We went to Mexico, and all this time, we're trying to get a visa. We even asked the American Embassy to intervene for us, to step in and try to help us get some kind of a visa where we could live down there and preach and work with the churches. And we even rented a house in Torreon, Coahuila, and we bought furniture, and we were ready to, we wanted to stay. But they told us that there was an article, 130 of the Mexican Constitution, that said only native-born Mexicans can exercise the ministry. And the American Embassy, they gave it to us real straight. They said, you can't be down here preaching with or without remuneration. You won't get any support from us. Well, we weren't scared. We weren't worried about being deported. But that wasn't any permanent. The tourist card is not a very good permanent way to stay in a country. So we came to the border, the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas, and established congregations on both sides of the border, especially from Matamoros up to Reynosa, and then worked with congregations even up to El Paso. But we preached in that area, also New Mexico, Arizona, California. And we worked in a large part of Mexico, going in for periods of just brief periods with tourist cards. We never had any problem so long as we're just going in and coming out. But these are states. These are states in Mexico: Tamaulipas, Nuevo León, Coahuila, Durango, Michoacán, Jalisco, Chiapas, Campeche, and then Mexico City. And so we pretty well worked all over Mexico. We had a travel trailer, and then later got a motor home. And being gone so much from home, that was real helpful. It was a home away from home. We could do our day's work, whatever was involved in the day's work of teaching, the services, and so forth. And then when it was over, Faye and I could just go to our camper and be at home. That was a big blessing to us. And I asked one of the brethren one time, I said, does this kind of go against the grain with these brethren? I mean, we had lived with them, we'd eaten with them, we'd been with them for years. And they knew that we didn't have any hang-up about that. But I said, when we do this, how do they feel about it? And Valente Rodriguez told me, he said, "Brother, I think all of them just really feel good about it. Because they know that that it's good for you, but also it also takes a little pressure off of them, because so many of them are poor, and they don't really have a lot of them don't really have accommodation." So anyway, we felt comfortable using our motorhome and going into these places. Then in the 1970s, started going into South America, began working in Chile, Argentina, and then Ruben Amador and I got a contact, one man, in Ecuador. And we went over there and worked with him and made some other contacts. And now there are several congregations in Ecuador, faithful congregations. 1977, this is not C-O-L-U-M, it's C-O-L-O-M. This is Colombia, South America. There was a Colombian in this country by the name of Carlos Restrepo, and he learned the truth through a correspondence course from Danville, Kentucky. And when he was baptized, and then he was going back to his country, while the elders in Danville, Kentucky sent Royce and me down there to study with his family as a starting place. So we went to Manizales, Colombia, and had studies there with that family, and didn't do any good with the parents. But that was a beginning. Starting in January then, Faye and I went down and stayed for 3 months, 1978, January through March, to start the work in Bogota, Colombia. And this has been one of the most rewarding, fruitful, wonderful work that we have engaged in. I don't know exactly. Royce, we made several trips back down there. But Royce has gone on and on many trips, and he says that there's about 50 congregations. They're small. Most of them are small. A lot of them are just in a family and a home and so forth. But the work has really spread all over Colombia, and I'm in contact with lots of them that, of course, I've never met. Key men in Colombia, I can't say enough about a brother by the name of Nestor Bermudez. A man knew that we had a sign in the window, and a man had seen it, and so he invited Nestor. Let's go by and see what they're about. And this guy, he couldn't care less. But Nestor, he was very interested. And he obeyed the gospel, and he has never looked back. This goes way back to the beginning. Nestor Bermudez. And Jaime Restrepo is a brother to the one that we started with. And the time that we were teaching that family, he's only 14 years old. But he was very intelligent, and he was really soaking it up. Very soon obeyed the gospel. And now he is very much a key man. He's all over the map. Very educated, and he's been extremely successful with radio preaching from Manizales, Colombia. Their zeal, not only these two, but there are others that I could mention, but their zeal is comparable to the men that we read about in Acts. It's just fascinating to know of all the work that they have done. Then in the 80s, we began going into the Yucatan Peninsula. Joe, that's where Joe just got back from, the Yucatan Peninsula. Merida, key city in that area. Campeche, Quintana Roo is another state. And I remember one time Clay and I were down there in Merida for a week of studies, and brethren came from I don't know where all, but they came from Quintana Roo, they came from Campeche, they came from all over that peninsula, and we had a terrific week of studies, and then that opened doors, of course, for us to go into other places. I want to mention Chiapas. I'm going to be talking in a few minutes about our publishing work, which is so extremely important to me right now. But back in when? The 60s especially, even before, but especially the 60s, the church in Senton, Texas, close to Corpus Christi, let me use their mimeograph machine. And they paid for the paper and ink and the floppy folders and the postage. And we started whatever sermons that Bill Reeves and I prepared, sermons and commentaries, class notes, we made them available. And every address we could get from Latin America, anywhere, and Spain, everywhere else, we sent those out. Because the elders in Senton were really sold on it, and they didn't put any limit on us, and so we just sent these books everywhere. Well, some of them got to the border there at Acuña, Coahuila, and here again, there's a guy that gets a hold of them, and he's talking about them, and he couldn't care less. But then he showed them, he took them back to where he lived down in Chiapas, and there was a brother by the name of Urbano Rolero. He was deeply interested. I mean, he just grabbed that and like it was gold and like it was a treasure and got in contact with us, and so that got us into Chiapas. That's way down in south part of Mexico. Tapachula, one of the key cities down there, and so we got into Chiapas through him, and then this very brother, Urbano, said, you know what? Said, I can get you started in Guatemala if you want to go over there. I've got contacts in Guatemala. He said, y'all make your plans and you fly in there and I'll get over there and I'll meet you. I'll be waiting on you at the airport. And so we got into Guatemala. And then working in Guatemala, we had contacts to go on into Honduras and Nicaragua. But that's the way it has worked. The way it has worked is you get into a place, you not only do what you can do with that particular place, but you're making contacts to no telling where. And you just keep your little notebook handy and write down names and addresses and make arrangements and then just keep going. The mid-80s, then, other countries of Central America, we had worked, we began Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, but then in the 80s, we got started in El Salvador and Costa Rica and Panama, and Ruben Amador has just returned from a very, very successful meeting in Paso Tempisque, Costa Rica. There's a real good, strong church in Alajuela, which is where the airport is, in close to San Jose, Costa Rica. And from there, Santiago Soto, he's just really going out and work. But our books, again, our books open doors in Paso Tempisque. Those brethren can't say enough. They just praise these books as if they were almost sacred because they learned things that they just simply hadn't learned. You know, in this country, I know that we rely so much on TV and the internet and all of that. But the printed page throughout Latin America is an extremely important tool in the work of the Lord. These books have opened doors in place after place after place. I sent the letter from this brother and Apostle Tempisque. I sent it to Allison Saturday. I said, translate this into English. I want to make copies of a lot of this material. I want y'all to read. It won't take you that long. It's just a page. But it is so encouraging. It's so to know that there are people who are really hungry and thirsty for the Word. And they eat it up, as we say. But anyway, 1985. Now, we had been to the... I mentioned up here, after the Yucatan Peninsula, we also went into the Caribbean. We began working in Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic. And then a brother from the Dominican Republic said, hey, there's a Dominican who now lives in Venezuela. And he came back to visit his mother here in Santo Domingo, and he obeyed the gospel. He learned the truth and obeyed, and now he's going back home. He's by himself in Barinas, Venezuela. I said, well, give me his name and address, and I got with it, and I went in January of 1985 to get with him. His name was Agriberto Esteves, and baptized his wife and about three or four others, established a church in Barinas, and he has been amazing. He's like Jaime Restrepo. He's all over the map. He's all over the map in Venezuela, and now there are several congregations in that country. Some real good men, good brethren. Ecuador, I mentioned that a while ago. Ecuador, Ruben and I started with one man. I think his name was Ramos. Ruben called him Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. Because every time this old brother would get up and talk, he'd start crying. But anyway, he was a good place, good man to start with. Again, books, Spain. You know, I mentioned that back in the 70s, when Sinton was paying for all these mimeograph copies and mailing them out, and we got a hold of a list of preachers and churches from Spain, Switzerland, all those countries, and sent them to them. And we didn't hear from anybody. But then, years later, a letter, or I don't remember if it was a letter or email, but anyway, there's a brother from a place called Dos Hermanas. It's a suburb of Seville. And he had got a hold of my books, and he wanted more. He wanted to be taught. He wanted to learn the truth. And so Bill Reese and I went over to Spain and got with them, and there is a good, strong church in Dos Hermanas. Men that are capable, qualified, they're talking about appointing elders. Also, we preached in Barcelona. We even preached in the northern part in Zaragoza and down on the Mediterranean in Alicante, but we weren't able to establish work. The contact we had didn't pan out. But anyway, there's at least that beginning. Also the Canary Islands. And since then, since we made those starts, beginning in the 70s, we've made many trips overseas. I remember when we got started in El Salvador, I remember one year I made four trips in one year, because we just had this opening doors all over the place, all over the country. But the main purpose of my trips into those countries and Faye, when she could go with me. But we'd have daily studies with preachers and teachers and those who could come from all around the area. And I think that some of the most profitable work that I did in the trips that we made overseas through the years were those studies with the preachers. But I felt frustrated. Here you are teaching. You've got a group of men here, and they've got their Bibles and their notebooks, and you're teaching, and you've got your material, and you're going to be there for a week or 10 days, and they're just taking notes furiously. But how many notes can you take? How much of it can you really, really get down, and how much of it can you really retain? I kept thinking, this needs to be printed. This needs to be put in a permanent form and a bound form and get it to them where they've got it in their house, in their library, and they can just read it and study it, you know, to their heart's content. A brother in Colombia gave me a motto. I've used it for myself, not haven't been proclaiming it from the housetop, but all through these years, my motto has been just what that Colombian said. He said, just put it in my hand. I was teaching a brother one-on-one. He said, just put it in my hand. I can read and study. And I thought, how true? Because in a few days, I'll be gone. But my books won't. The books will be there in their hands. And I've told them, I've said over and over and over, I said, I don't claim to be a scholar. Any preacher, any gospel preacher throughout the country could do what I've done. Just a matter of your studies, your classes, your sermons, and put them in some form, mimeograph, copy machine, however you can get them printed, but make them available, especially in countries where there is such a scarcity of such help. Another thing that worries me is that in a lot of those places, the brethren, they want something, and they'll go to a religious bookstore, and they'll buy religious books, but they're not mature enough to sift out the false doctrine. And so that gets into their teaching and preaching. And that's kind of worrisome also. So it's so important to help them with printed study. Now, of course, we get lots of mail as a result of the website. If you haven't looked at it, David has a little link to my website down on the homepage of the church website. And if you haven't looked at it, open it. I'd like you to look at it. My website is voluminous. I've been talking about books. Well, we're distributing now. We're publishing and distributing about 2 dozen books, about 26 books. And nearly all of it's on the website. And it's all categorized. It's you got sermons, commentaries, and different. I have 9 books. I forgot to bring them in. I got 9 books of sermons. Have commentaries on most of the New Testament books. Bill and I, some Old Testament books. Have studies on marriage, divorce, and remarriage. We have the Smith-Hicks debate in Spanish. Studies on Calvinism, institutional issues, unity and diversity, the deity of Christ, modernism, the creation question, the days of creation, and so forth. We also have other authors. We have Cogdell's New Testament Church and Walking by Faith. We have 4 of the Waldron class books. I've picked out 4 that I think are the most important. We have Hark Riders. First Principles, the first 2 of his series of books. And we mail hundreds of packages. Priority Mail International, flat rate envelopes. I meant to bring one in, but you see them at the post office. You see them all the time. There's a 11 by 14 that we use. You can get about 3 pounds of books in that envelope. And just a few years ago, it was like $8.95, $9.95, Then it went to $12.95, and then last year it jumped to $16.95, and this January it jumped to $23.95. I asked the post office here in West Columbia, I said, do I have any option? He said, no. You got to go first class. Good service. That's one good thing. It's good service. But imagine four packages, about $100. The East Side Congregation in Athens, Alabama, had been supporting us for 40 years in the Spanish work. All these years, the traveling and the work that we've done in the Spanish work by the elders of the East Side Congregation in Athens, Alabama, have been so super good to us. The whole congregation really behind us. And when I reported this in January in my report, I said the postage for this has gone up. They'd been making a check each month to the United States Postal Service for $600, and they jumped it up to $1,000. That's the kind of interest they have in this publishing work. But we had to cut back, but we're still mailing lots and lots of packages. Because the work's growing, new congregations being established all over everywhere, new men. You have men starting out to preach, and yet they're by themselves. The man that has started the congregation, he has to travel to get there, and he can't be there all the time. So here again, they'll contact us, said, man, send these books to so-and-so, that he really needs them. And that is extremely rewarding, of course, for us. We get lists of names of those who want them and need them, and they'll go to most of them don't have computers, but they'll go to a cyber cafe. They'll pay for to get an email address, and you know, just write a few words, just pay for the space, the time that they use the equipment to order the books and to acknowledge receipt of the book, so that they'll get more. We can only send like a couple of packages at a time each month. But anyway, we get lists of names who want them and need them, and I have 12 distribution lists of the various countries, combining some of them, and about almost 1,000 names. And every Saturday, I do it before Saturday, but I send it on Saturday. I prepare a sermon, a study, a lengthy study, and send that to these distribution lists. And I get a very encouraging response from it. David reports the hits that we get on our local website. And we don't have any idea. We're sowing the seed, and only God knows where all it goes. That's true. But it is encouraging to hear from you. I'm doing a series on eldership. We really need to appoint elders in the Spanish churches. And I'm going to have a little booklet when I get through with the series. But I have had an overwhelming response to those sermons I've been sending out on the eldership. And they send me suggestions. I say, I'm not only sending you material, I want you to send me what you have. I'm sure you've done studies also, and that'll help me, because I'm not going to rush into print. And so I'm getting that. But using email, using the website, and these books. And we've got a new generation of preachers. We've been around, we've been in the work long enough. When I first started going into Guatemala, there was a young man, 19 years old, name is Ricardo Ventura, and I was real impressed with him. And he was just preaching and working and all that, and I asked somebody there in Athens, I said, you know, this guy for just next to nothing could let his job go and give full time to preaching. So somebody picked up on it, and there's two or three others like that, and pretty soon the church itself took those names over and started supporting those men. But what I started to say is, this 19-year-old boy that I started with now has a son about 22 or 23 years old, Manuel, and he is a real fine young man, gospel preacher, second generation. And this has happened over and over and over. I'm sending books to the second generation of preachers. And that, of course, is another very encouraging aspect of the work. But these books have opened doors in all the countries. And so that's what I'm doing now. That's what I'm doing in Columbia. I'm overwhelmed with email. At any moment, I have a backup of anywhere from 35 to 135 emails that need processing. And a lot of them are Bible questions. A lot of them, they want to get into a discussion. I got a Baptist preacher in Madrid, Spain, wanting to, he's real unhappy about what I wrote about Calvinism. And so I have an exchange going with him. Another one writes an Adventist and stuff like that. And, of course, it's just so many hours in the day. But these, the website and the book, that keep on opening doors. Well, we need, I'm not just talking about this pulpit, but we need more preaching on world evangelism throughout this country. The church, the conservative, we call ourselves that, sound or faithful, whatever you want to call it, but these churches could be doing a lot more in world evangelism. We're so well off. We're prosperous. People in this country have no idea how blessed we are. And we just spend our money on ourselves, and there are countless millions of them. Now, all these countries that need to hear the gospel. People are dying in droves without ever having heard a gospel sermon. We need to really wake up. We need to put it high on the list of our priorities. The power, the pulpit, can't be overemphasized. Bible classes also. The church, for example, this church right here, I'm sure, is strong on basics. Strong against error, all kinds of error. Fine. By the same token, the same strong preaching and teaching on this subject will get results. It needs to be done with the same thoroughness, with the same conviction, the same determination, the same persistence. And it'll get results. Thank you for your patience, for your interest. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy, of course, to talk to you further about this work. But if there's anyone here at this time that hasn't obeyed the gospel, well, that's what we're talking about. That's what this is all about. Getting people all over the world to hear and to understand and obey the gospel of Christ. Very simple. Very precious. Let's stand and sing the invitation song, please.